the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
So our teaching theme this year is follow me. Not follow me, follow Jesus. We've been thinking over the last few weeks, if you've been coming to Sunday mornings, about learning, loving, living, and listening to Jesus, to God's word. And in the next few weeks, we're going to be thinking about who Jesus is, what he did when he was on this earth, and about his amazing generosity. As we've already heard, Jesus showed amazing, outrageous generosity when he was here. So over the next 4 weeks on Sunday mornings, we're going to learn about how the same Lord Jesus is just as generous to us today and how we can respond with our own thankfulness. It's great to see so many things on that tree that we have to be thankful for. And we're going to learn about how to be thankful, how to be joyful, and how to be generous ourselves. So shall we read our passage together? You've already heard it in a story. Let's read the words. If you've got a green Bible, if you'd like to grab hold of it. Luke chapter 17, verse 11. It's on page 992 of the green Bibles. Luke chapter 17, verse 11. Now, on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus travelled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." When he saw them, he said, "Go, show yourself to the priests." And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, "Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Rise and go, your faith has made you well." So let's set the scene for this story. That's a map of Israel in the Bible times. And in this story, right at the beginning, there are 3 places mentioned: Jerusalem, Galilee, and Samaria. Now, in Luke's version of the story of the life of Jesus, there's a pivot point in the story where everything starts to turn, and it comes in chapter 9. In chapter 9, verse 51, we read this: "As the time approached for him to be taken up to heaven, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem." Now, as we're finding out this year, as we study lots of parts of Luke's version of Jesus' life, Luke tells us about the whole of Jesus' life, right from his birth to his death to his resurrection. But after this verse, everything in Luke starts to point in one direction only, and that direction is Jerusalem. In the original language of the Bible, resolutely literally means set your face towards. Jesus set his face towards Jerusalem. Jerusalem begins to loom large in this story of Luke. Jesus is going to Jerusalem. He's been there before, but where we are in Luke chapter 17, he's going there for the final time. Verse 11, now he's on his way to Jerusalem. Jesus is going to celebrate the Jewish festival of Passover in Jerusalem. Jesus is going to die in Jerusalem. Jesus is going to be rejected, mocked, and murdered in Jerusalem. The second place that's mentioned at the beginning of this story is Galilee. So Galilee is up there in the north, the kind of pink shaded area. Galilee is the heartland of Jesus' early ministry. It's up there in the north where people first followed him. It's where he called his first disciples by the shores of Galilee. It's where he first healed people. It's where this idea of the kingdom of God coming, the kingdom of love and truth and justice, starts to take hold. And then we have Samaria. Samaria is right in the middle between Galilee in the north and Judea in the south, and you have to go through Samaria to get to Jerusalem. Samaria, in Bible terms, is actually a place of outsiders. There was a deep-rooted, bitter rift between the Jewish people and the Samaritans. Originally, they were one nation, one people. But at this point in the story, they've been hostile to each other for hundreds and hundreds of years. And the Samaritans, actually, were particularly hostile to Jews who were on their way to take part in religious festivals in Jerusalem, like the festival of Passover. It was at least a three-day journey on foot from Galilee in the north down to Jerusalem further south. And the quickest way was to travel through Samaria. But the Samaritans actually would often refuse overnight shelter for the pilgrims because of these bitter religious differences. And in fact, the Jews would often, from Galilee, would often travel to the other side, to the east side of the Jordan, so they didn't have to go through Samaria. So they're the three places that we hear about in this story. And Jesus actually is quite vague about where, Luke is actually quite vague about where Jesus is at this point in his journey. But he's very clear that he wants us to know, Luke, the writer of this story, wants to know that Jesus is on the border. And we're not actually told whether the village that's mentioned here is a Samaritan village or a Jewish village. What we are told is that Jesus is in border country. Jesus is in the borderlands. So two things to remember as we go a little bit further into this story. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem, and he's in border country. So as we read, 10 men start to shout at Jesus. They're really shouting from a distance. They know they have to keep their distance. You know, they are outcasts. They have skin conditions. The word leprosy in Bible times means a whole variety of skin conditions. Probably not fatal, probably not life-threatening, but completely and utterly life-changing. It meant they couldn't join in to their communities, their families. They couldn't earn what others earn. They couldn't have the life that others have. They were outcasts. So they knew they had to keep their distance. They knew that they were not wanted, but still they shout, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." They must have known about Jesus. They must have heard about him. I think they're using his name in desperation. Jesus. Now, actually, the name Jesus was quite common then. But I think that it has such power when it's used to call this man, this Jesus. This Jesus who actually lives up to the meaning of his name, the one who saves. Jesus, Master, have pity on us. Why do they use the word master? Master actually means one who has authority, and particularly one who has authority and able to do miracles. And previously in Luke, it's only the disciples who use it. So we don't know whether it's out of sheer desperation or divine insight. What these men are doing is placing themselves in a position of submission to Jesus, in the hope that he will be generous to them. And what does Jesus do? He cleanses them. As they went, they were cleansed. Jesus is giving them the means to go back to their homes, back to their families. He does have pity. He is generous. He tells them they must go to the temple. That's the way that they can come out of the borderland that they've been living in. That's the way to get back to normal life, to become part of the community again, to go back to the temple. If the priests let them worship at the temple, they can be fully restored to their homes and their families. So I have a question for us this morning. What do these men do to earn Jesus' generosity? What do they do to earn the cleansing that's going to restore them back to their community? What do they give? What penance do they pay to earn this mercy, this pity, this generosity? And I think we know the answer, don't we? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. They ask. That's all they do. They don't do anything to earn Jesus' mercy. Regardless of who they are, the generosity of Jesus is actually without borders. The generosity of Jesus crosses borders. The generosity of Jesus comes with no borders. You know, we may think it does, but it doesn't. You and me, we're not beyond the generosity of Jesus. That's very clear from this story. That's amazingly clear. But there is a twist in the tale. There's more for us to learn. Here's another question. Which temple do they go to? These 10 men who have been cleansed, Jesus tells them to go to a temple. Which temple do they go to? Because we know from later on in the story that it's a mixed group of people. This group has at least one Samaritan. There's probably more. It's a mixed group of outcasts. Do they go to the Jewish temple and the Jewish to Jerusalem, the Jewish centre of worship, or do they go to Mount Gerizim, the Samaritan centre of worship? You know, Jesus is at border country. He's on the borderline between two different parts of the country. They ask for pity, and Jesus gives generously to them. He doesn't ask them of anything. He gives them everything they need to be cleansed. He gives them practically what they need to be with their people, to not be outcasts. The generosity of Jesus is without borders. So the 10 are cleansed enough to kind of return to a more normal life. That's the simple fact of the story. They're cleansed enough to be restored by the grace of Jesus, the power of God, because Jesus is generous. But one comes back. He's a Samaritan. He's a foreigner as far as Jesus is concerned. I wonder if he got to the Samaritan place of worship. I suspect not. On the way, what happens is he saw that he was healed. He saw the reality of who Jesus was, and he was drawn back to him. He saw this amazing generosity, this generosity that is without borders, and was drawn back. And as he's travelling along the road, seeing that he's been cleansed, he gets this compulsion to go back to Jesus. The way to God's mercy is no longer to be found in religious activities in the temple. He's met the presence of God on earth, and it's not in a temple. It's Jesus. Jesus has the power of God. He realizes Jesus has been so generous to me, to everyone. There are no borders. I must get back to him. And he was compelled with thankfulness and praise and love. I think he had a glimpse of what Jesus could do, and he wanted more. You know, forget the temple. Forget the old religious practices. Forget everything else. I've got to get back to Jesus. And Jesus is there. His generosity has no borders. He's there in the border country. I think we all have our border countries. I don't know what they might be for you. I think we all have parts of our life where we're not really in the heartland. We're at the edges where it's difficult and unclear. You know, maybe you are in the border between your faith and your family who don't follow Jesus. And it's hard. Maybe you're in the border between sickness and health. You can't be in the heartland because you are not well enough and it really sucks. You know, maybe you're not even here. Maybe you're listening to this online because actually you can't face people. You feel like you don't belong, and it's making you really, really sad. You know, maybe you're in a difficult workplace where there's just so many demands being placed on you that you can't even think about faith, and it's really tough. We all have the borderlands that we sometimes live in, the places we don't quite feel at the centre of things. We're on the outside, where it's hard and it's tough and it's sad. But Jesus spent time in the borderlands. Jesus comes out to meet us in those borderlands, and his amazing generosity can be found in those borderlands. And maybe I suggest that that's even where the generosity of Jesus is most available and most powerful. Now, this story is set in a time and culture where everyone believed in God. The existence of God wasn't in question. You know, the right and proper cultural thing to do was to go to the temple, to go through a ritual to get cleansing. But Jesus brings a new way. There's no need to go to the temple. There is only a need to go back to Jesus. And I wonder where we go to get cleansed, to feel okay about the mess of life, the compromises, the complexities, the darknesses that we see in ourselves and others. You know, we don't live in a culture that requires us to go to a temple to get cleansed, to feel connected, to feel okay about who we are and what life is all about. But I think actually we all have rituals, don't we? We all worship something. What temple do you worship at? What temple do I worship at? You know, is it the temple of success? Is that where you get that feeling of, it's okay, I'm okay, everything will be okay if I'm successful? Maybe it's the temple of family. Everything will be okay if my family's okay. Or maybe the temple of comfort and pleasure. Everything will be okay if I'm happy and comfortable and those I love are happy and comfortable. Or maybe it's the temple of escapism. That's where we go to try and make everything okay in the mess of life. We go and worship at things that numb us, you know, whether it's alcohol or adrenaline or video games or social media or simply just withdrawing and locking ourselves away. Is that where we go to feel okay about some of the mess of feeling like outsiders and just some of the mess of general life? What Luke wants to tell us in this story, what Jesus shows us through how he acted in this story, is he is the temple that we worship at. He's the presence of God on earth. He's temple, priests, all rolled into one. He's the way to get back to God. And somehow, amazingly, this one man was drawn back. He understood that. He was compelled to go back to Jesus. Look at what it says in verse 15 and 16. He came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. I think Jesus' whole life, actually, was lived in the borderlands. If you think about it, his true home, his heartland, is with his Father, who's described in the Bible as the Father of the heavenly lights, the I am who I am, the Ancient of Days. He's in the borderlands. He's on his way to Jerusalem for you, for us. He's going to die for us. He crossed many, many borders to be with you, to show you who he is, to love you. He even crossed the border of life and death. So we need to go back to him. You know, in your mind, we need to look at what he has given us. He's given us life and cleansing, and we need to start resolutely walking back to him, setting our face towards him. And the thing we need to do is to decide to do one thing to make that decision visible and real. One thing that says, yes, I'm walking back to Jesus. He's where I need to worship. He's who I need to thank. And can I suggest that maybe the one thing that we need to do is think of the person who's in this room that you trust the most and tell them what Jesus has said to you this morning. Sometimes we have to look really hard to see Jesus' generosity. You know, sometimes I think we need to shout like these men, Lord, Master, have pity on me. He wants to fully save us. He wants to be generous to us, not just to cleanse us for a short time, but to save us, to be with us forever. So whether it's out of desperation or divine insight, we need to place ourselves in a position of submission to Jesus like these men did. Then we need to go back to him to be whole and saved and to worship at his feet. That's where our thankfulness turns into faith. Faith turns into love. And then love turns into action for love for other people. Jesus is available in your border country. He crossed borders. There are no borders to his generosity.